So good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming out for this wonderful meeting in August. Thank you all for finding the meeting. Again, this is not in our normal location. Never fear, we're going to shift rooms again back to our normal location for next month's meeting. This is just where we are while the summer session is or was in session. Pass that back. Or take it, you know, whichever. All right. So, again, a lot of exciting things going on tonight. We have a very exciting door prize, and more importantly, we have a very exciting opportunity to hear from one of our very own in his efforts in asteroid hunting. Mr. Ben Loyola is going to be teaching us about what he has done and how he helped us help save the world, or at least helped us realize that the world didn't need saving. I would also like to thank those of you who came out for the first time this evening. I know we have a lot of members of the club who are with us, not for the first time ever or the first time with the club, but the first time at the meeting here or our monthly get-together, or at least the first one in a while. So if you would like to raise your hand to be recognized, please do. We'll all come by and greet you later. If you'd rather just kind of fade into the paintwork, because we are, as a whole, not exactly the most outgoing folks other than going outdoors for a hobby, that's perfectly fine. But welcome. We appreciate you, and I appreciate the high attendance we have today. All right. That said, I'm going to go ahead and get things kicked off and turn the podium over to our vice president, Mr. Jeff Goldstein, to discuss our upcoming schedule and some events. We've got a lot of excitement going.
Thank you.
Welcome.
All right. And let's see. Here is the Colander. Okay. As everybody know where the Colander is located? It's on Night Sky Network, and we got there two ways. We go directly Night Sky Network, or you can go to the website, backbayastro.org. And here we are on Thursday 7th. Our next event is not until Skywatch the 16th. Is that right?
Are you signed in?
I'm signed in. Well, I signed in as me for the other. Maybe I'm going to go to the other one.
It doesn't have porn watch. So
that's not right. That's not right. So I'm going to go to this other thing here. Better. That's better.
And,
well, the other one wasn't signed in with me. I don't know. Maybe it's the public. Oh, I know. It was public. The other one's public, and they don't get to see where when Corn Watch is because it's a private thing. Just for us chickens. Okay. So we got the
club. Can you hear your screen, Jeff?
Oh, that would be good. Let me share my screen.
I've given you the power.
If I dare. Uh-oh.
Window.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
Get a millennial. Baby boomer in need.
Look out.
Yeah, so in fairness.
Where is Gabriel? Where's
look
Gabriel?
Out.
This is a different room now.
So this version wouldn't launch the Zoom app. We're using the browser version. So.
Nice. I like that I see myself twice.
Are you
sick? I was going to say. Try to open up your thing.
That's a lot of rich robbers.
Meeting is being recorded. I don't see the calendar. Do you guys see the calendar?
Pull it up on the bottom.
Oh, you're sharing what you have business.
Well, usually when I share it, it goes directly to it.
There you go. That worked?
Y'all see that? Rich.
Yeah, I see a black screen.
That's bad. All right, let me try again.
Well, we'll send out the link into the, or if someone out in Zoom land could put the link out into the chat.
Yeah, it's okay. I think we know where to find it. You can just talk through it.
Well, okay, well, I'm not going to be like Trish. We have money. That's it. That's my report.
Yeah, that's all you need to do.
That's your report. Now, let me see if I can. Let me see here. God, I can't figure out how to do it. How do I share the screen?
It says, I don't think you can this version.
Yeah, just stop it. We'll talk through it.
There's three tabs, though. You might want to check those two tabs on the share.
It was three tabs?
Sure, there was three tabs.
All right, try it again then.
All right, one more time.
Share.
See, there's Chrome tab.
Chrome tab.
Nope. Yeah.
Window.
Okay, can you open up a calendar on the Chrome tab?
Well, I could. I don't think I logged in there. Maybe
or
I did.
You can try entire screen and then open up your calendar.
All right. In the interest of time, I'm going to, Jeff, if you'd be willing to go ahead and try and get that log in. Let's go ahead and get into the treasurer and secretary's reports.
All right.
Since we don't need the window display for that.
All right.
And you can get logged in on a Chromecast.
Okay, go ahead and share. I'll log in with the other one. You're up, Rich.
All right, so let's get your window. Do y'all see the books?
Well, I got out of it just a minute. I can't do that in this too, so I'll have to wait. Yeah, maybe you can share the calendar.
Yeah, you said not have a problem. I usually run it from
Yeah, we normally run it from the app and it's not a problem, but the app would not load on this computer.
Yeah, I have the same problem. I usually run it from am I sharing? Do you see a Excel spreadsheet right now?
Just go ahead and tell us
where is that?
Proceed at the bottom. We'll see. All the way to the bottom.
We're gonna trust you, Rich.
Okay, you guys got it.
It says proceed back to Astro. Look, let's see. The bottom. There you go. We're almost there, Rich. Hold on.
Yeah, well, we're not signed in, but.
All right, let's go.
I thought you guys were.
I was having trouble sharing as well, so I.
All right, we see your shiny face, Rich.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just go through. I'm unable to pull up the spreadsheets, but we have in the accounts just over $11,000 across our three accounts. The reason that's about a $4,100 dip from the previous month, and it's not because Jeremy has a lot of new cool stuff in his his garage. Our scholarship winner finally cashed the check we sent her, so that was $3,500 that came out of our two scholarship funds. And then the rest of the money, you know, we spent some East Coast Star Party money. Bruce had spent his allowance of almost $700 on raffle tickets or raffle prizes for East Coast Star Party. We brought in a couple $100, mainly from East Coast Star Party registrations, and then we had four new members join, so we are up to 188 members. The main dip, we're finding the scholarships. We got almost $1,800 in primary. We just got the check in about $872 in Georgia June, so that should be sitting pretty good. So we have brave souls who are going out on Boardwalk Astronomy even when it's cloudy, so we can say that we were there and we can charge them for the scholarship money and Georgia June with our raffle and our ticket sales. We'll get to where we need to be. So going into next year, we should be fine on scholarship fronts. But I don't really have any much to say. The other expenses we had was the picnic. Buying food and stuff. So we had a lot of expenses, a lot of money had come out, but we had paid all our major expenses for the year already. So that 11 grand that's in there, it's probably not going to go down very much for the rest of the year. Should probably sit about there. Is we should probably break even because there'll be more expenses because East Coast Star Party, but we tend to break about even on that. We currently have 9 registrations for the fall. So we've taken in some money and we spent raffle prize money, but those expenses are about a hit because I know Bruce is planning on buying porta potties and all that kind of stuff here in the near future. That's all I got.
I got a question. Associate membership. What's the procedure for that? We have a couple of members that need to, get paid up for associate membership. Do they write due or how do they do it?
How do they pay their membership? Is that the question?
For associate membership.
Yeah, it's same as a regular membership. If you go to the website, to the BBA store, you will see a drop-down. You can select associate membership and pay the $5.
Okay. And for each person, like there's no family plan, right?
So it's $5 if you're an associate with Astronomical League, $0 for a associate member without Astronomical League, which is
correct.
Family plan. So yes, there is a family plan if you don't care about voting or about getting a separate Astronomical League.
I see like our club only events, if you're the member and you're bringing your kids or family members, no one's going to care. bring them along. It's only if you want to actually be a member of the Astronomical League, we charge you the $5 because they charge us the $5. They actually charge us $6 now. We're okay. We got funds.
And that probably comes in the fact that you're doing the observing programs with your son or daughter or somebody else in your family.
Correct. Yeah, if you wanted to do Sky Puppy or something like that, you would need to be an AL member. So you would need that associate membership for your child. And so we offer that for, I think, you got to be under 18 years old to make use of that.
Thank you.
But that's why we set it up. So if you have a kid and they want to do observing project, they want to go down, do binocular Messier, pay the $5. That covers AL, and you can get those. They individually can do those individual projects and get the award, the certificates, and all that stuff in their name.
Which Bruce is now looking a little unhappy because I think he was planning on covering some of that material. But that's...
I'm just here to pick up Bruce's slack. We are all here to pick up Bruce's slack.
All right.
Jeremy probably knows more about that than you.
Any other questions for the treasurer?
You ready?
All right. Any discussion or a willingness to accept the treasurer's report as brief?
I'm going to accept the report.
Second.
Any discussion? Third. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
What are you going to do to not accept it? Like, what are the ramifications for me?
I appreciate the bad attitude. Please note that John had a bad attitude. All right. It's probably because I worked him too hard carrying down a 60-year-old projector. All right. Gabe.
All right. So I'm going to be brief so y'all don't have to listen to me ramble for too long. Because as y'all know, most of you were there. It was a picnic last month. So... meeting was a bit shorter. It was about like half the usual time, and it was a great event, by the way. Big thanks to Jeremy for learning how to use a charcoal grill on the day so we can have our burgers and dogs. So really, the whole meeting was just old business, pretty much. It was new business then. It'll be old business tonight. That's going to be saved for, I think we're going to save it for that, just because I heard Jeremy's request. Other than that, though, like, there really isn't a whole lot else to talk about. Like, again, like, Jeff did his reports for, like, the June calendar events. And then Bruce and a little bit touched up about the Shoemaker grants, which are things looking for locally or privately funded, like, scholarships. Help track near Earth objects. That's really all I have for the July meeting.
All right.
And most, again, everything else we say for due for old business tonight.
I'd just like to add that a lot of fun was had at the picnic, and it was a lot of fun learning how to grill for 35 people for the first time on charcoal. That was not my best planning move. Other than my admission to charcoal ignorance, would any comments or additions, subtractions?
You did a great job for your first time on charcoal.
Well, yeah. You did a great job for my first time on charcoal.
I'd like to do it for a gas grill purchase.
And the motion dies for one second. I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes, abbreviated though they may be. I think we're the second.
Yes.
In favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously. Excellent. All right. Jeff, I got you logged in up here if you'd like to go ahead and go over the calendar.
Well, I logged in before, but...
Why log us into Chrome?
Share. The whole problem is share.
Here.
Share with us.
I will drive for
Rich
you.
Rich, share?
Rich, do you want to let us share?
You have the power.
Look at it. There we go.
All right, very good.
Oh, you got it.
I think we confused it.
Interesting. So this is the web version.
It normally has a little green thing.
Whatever browser you have.
It normally has a green thing around it, so I can't tell if I'm sharing or not. I don't see anybody on the right side. This is not working right.
No, it's up there. You're good.
Okay, tonight's the club meeting. We know that. Corn Watch at Cornland's a private thing for us, and they go. Serious astrophotographers go there, and that's supposed to be a real good spot. I haven't even tried it yet. Skywatch the next day, the 16th, is a big public event, and we love to go out. And if anybody has any questions while I'm going over it, if you're new, I'll be glad to expound on each one of these. But Skywatch is a real fun one. About 10 telescopes, and it's a big event. Lots of people, sometimes as many as 200, sometimes as few as 20. But it's a good one. Again, Corn Watch the following Friday, and then Night Watch at Chip Oaks is another private club event. Garden Star is the 28th, and George, you're not going to be at that one?
Yes, I will be.
Oh.
No, wait, it's August, I'll be there. September, I won't be.
Okay, that's right. So Garden Stars at 8:30, George Honcho's that thing, and that's a fun event for the public. Let me see. I got to go to the next month here real fast. Okay. Astronomy by the River is pending. We're waiting for – they didn't put a time in, so we're waiting for verification for the times. But right now I chose to put in 7:15. So we'll see if that time is satisfactory for everybody. And September Boardwalk Astronomy is that's number 5. I think we've hit all of them except
we had even ones they didn't hear us go.
Yeah, they didn't even know. So that's a good one to go to. It's a fun event. Plus, it's a funny event too. Sometimes this is Kempsville Rec Center. Following day on Wednesday, Astronomy 101. I don't know which one that is. I guess it's number 1, George, right?
The 1st of October. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the first? No. Astronomy number 1, number 1?
No, it's going to be animal constellation.
Okay, great. Club meeting again the following Thursday. Saturday, Sunday, the 6th, that's at Elizabeth River Park. A lot of fun. Does anybody need verification what Saturday, Sunday is? I'll be glad to talk about that.
Okay. Such a great event. There's
because the general public doesn't know what I'm talking about. Saturday, Sunday, what do they have, Sundays? On Saturday?
No. I'm going to be honest with you. I've been to one outreach event.
Okay.
And I have not seen any way that any of the rest of it operates.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's been a real fun year.
Excellent. Well, come out to the Boardwalk for sure and Skywatch. Definitely those two. Lots of public and lots of people and lots of scopes. And even if you don't bring a telescope, it's a lot of fun. You can point to constellations and do things like that. And people really appreciate it. You'd be surprised how much you know compared to the general public. You know, where's the black holes? All this stuff. You got all that kind of stuff. Okay. Where did I leave off? Saturday, Sunday, on the 6th. The general, you know, here's the Friday Corn Watches, both of those together. Skywatch on the 13th, East Coast Star Party. So I hope Bruce will talk about the East Coast Star Party more, and we'll get some more members to sign up. There's only 6 of us signed up?
A lot of us signed up. I don't think I've signed up yet.
Okay. All right. And so that public night, that's a fun one too, on Friday night. It starts the 18th and it runs through Sunday morning. Okay. So it's all weekend and we're out of there by Sunday morning. Okay. And then Chamberlain's Stargazing, that's at the Chamberlain Hotel in Hampton. And I just approved that one yesterday. So they're excited for us to come out and show them the stars.
More information on that one.
Okay, yeah, let's take a look. For example, you know, if you know how to go to Night Sky Network.
I saw the listing on it pop up.
Okay. And they're planning a Fly Me to the Moon and all this stuff. And the first time they schedule it, it goes through me, right? And they go, okay, we want to see Fly Me to the Moon. And first one didn't have the moon visible. So I said, can we schedule you for a moon visible? So I suggested the 25th. So I think it's going to be waxing gibbous. And
don't have a final location.
Oh, yeah. the location itself? Yeah, let, so let's say, okay, it's in Hampton, but you can click on the location.
Click on the address.
On the address itself, huh?
Click on the address itself.
Okay.
The chain. It brings out a map.
Yeah.
And you put in your starting
Fort Monroe.
It's on the right hand side.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
Put in your starting position, like your home or wherever.
Uh-huh.
We'll tell you how to get there. Step by step directions.
TCC from here. And here's the directions. See? 38 minutes. Not bad.
Wow. See, I live in Newport News.
Oh, it's even shorter for
that's
you.
That's what I'm saying. That's an event that I could probably
excellent.
Do something.
Please do.
I just don't know what.
Okay.
So maybe at some point we can talk about sure. what
right.
got available.
Show me about RSVP though.
Oh yeah, the RSVP. Let me back up.
This is key, and this is something that we're not all, and I myself am guilty of not RSVPing for events terribly early.
Oh.
But if you RSVP for an event, one, the person who's the club member who's kind of heading that up knows you're planning on coming out. If it's a name they don't necessarily recognize the scene all the time, that person may also reach out to say, "Hey, I see you're coming out. What can I do to help you?" Also, if you RSVP for an event, because Jeff just mentioned something is happening in October and it sounds really cool, and here it is the beginning of August, you're like, okay, that sounds great, and then you flat out forget about it. You'll get a reminder 2 days in advance, hey, there's an event coming up that you RSVP for. And you say, hooray, I'd forgotten I was going to do that. It's going to be awesome. Or, oh, I'm doing that. Uh-oh. And then you make a choice. But that's okay. This is a volunteer effort.
Okay, so you get an email that says RSVP, yes, no, but if you ignore that and you think about it, you want to sign up for Chamberlain, you go to the calendar and you click on Chamberlain, and then you can RSVP right here, this tab, and you can scroll down, and if it's Hope Zeigler, you can just say add right here, and I'll go ahead and do it just to show you. And then you can change it to yes or probably. You know, you got two choices. All right. So I will not do that because I'm not sure she was going to go.
Also, if you RSVP for an event and the event ends up getting canceled, you get a notification that the event was canceled.
Yeah.
So there shouldn't be confusion. We try to over-communicate when an event is going to be canceled or if it's going to be iffy. But...
What is the expectation for that event?
For this one?
So for all of our
are we just looking at the moon or
well,
specific the fly me to the moon?
So,
the moon and Saturn. We'll be able to see Saturn too.
We go out there and
okay, you see that's
there's only so many telescopes that you really want to point at the moon unless there's nothing else to see, which where we were at. This past week at the boardwalk, we had two telescopes pointed at the moon, and that's it. Jeff was showing pictures of previous things that were more interesting than the moon, for at least for us, that he was projecting, but we were largely looking at the moon for most of the rest of the night. But really, when you go out there, it's dealer's choice. Pointed at something that you think is interesting you want to talk about to the people who come up, because people are going to come look through your telescope for 20 or 30 seconds, and then move on to the next telescope. You just get to, you get to pick your favorite objects, split some binaries, look up a nebula of your favorite, pull out some clusters, tell them about it. People will be awed and amazed. And for most people, that's the only time they're going to look through a telescope like that.
Three of these get to listen to Sinatra?
I think that's reasonable, although musical choices is usually coordinated through the lead.
For instance, Garden Stars. A typical event. We usually have four or five telescopes. One or two might be looking at the moon. Somebody else might be finding a double star. Somebody else might be finding a nebula, pointing out something else. So it's just whatever's available. We call them targets of opportunity.
Well, see, I've got basically like an astro rig that I could set up and do live views of what I'm looking at, and I have an 8-inch Knopsonian. Now, the astro rig would be, it's tracking and all that kind of stuff. So you wouldn't be looking through it, you'd be looking at the screen.
Right.
But I don't know if that's anything that anybody's interested in.
Yeah.
And then the Knopsonian,
we've done that before too.
Yeah, whatever you want to bring to the event, whatever you want to show, we're very. free to do whatever you want. There's no real set agenda for most of our events on what we're looking at. It's all of you.
And if you need suggestions, like I'm not really sure what to point at, we can go over, hey, you know, I mean, tonight I would show X, Y, or Z. Okay. And then inevitably you and I will end up showing the same thing at the same time. And then we're like, oh, wait, he's showing that. We'll move on to something else.
He does.
I swear, every time he moves to Elbirio, I do the same thing.
The difference is that with the Astro rigs, I can just tell it where to go.
Yeah. Your passion and your knowledge is going to shine through, and it's going to be visible to those members of the public that are joining us. Mm-hmm. And that's what they really come out there for, to really see that slice of wonder. And especially as we're getting into the time of year when Saturn's going to be visible, there's nothing as amazing as watching the light of Saturn reflect in the glow of joy from somebody's face when they haven't seen it through a telescope.
My next goal is live stacking of something.
Good.
That would be a cool thing.
Lots of expertise here. Eddie's good, a good resource for that, too. All right. I just signed up for Skywatch next week coming
up. You just signed me
up? I just now signed up. No, I signed me up.
Oh.
Let me back up and show you. Oh, can't do it that way. So I am, well... I'll refresh the screen. I'm on the list. Should be at the top. There. No, still not at the top.
Depends on how you're sorted. I think I sort by name by default.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm a yes, and it's usually at the top. The yeses are usually at the top. Okay.
So that's happy to chat one. With you either now or later if you want to discuss some of our more regular events. I would just like to offer Cornwatch. Not just for serious astrophotographers. I am very not much neither. I'm neither especially serious nor an astrophotographer. But I have a blast every time I go out to Cornwatch. It's our members-only event. It's a lot of fun. Sometimes I'll just go out there with binoculars to hang out with my fellow astronomers. Sometimes we do have astrophotographers. I think that the really serious astrophotography happens at Nightwatch over at Jabokes, where it may be a little bit darker. But it is a lot of fun, and it is members-only. That is one thing that we can... Dave trying to slow me down there.
No, I'm just waiting for underground so I can add on.
Please do.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, he's absolutely right. Like, if it's like, don't deal with, like, any, like, pesky kids, like, running around, like risking, like, breaking your equipment. And it's also a great time where if you want to, like, get familiar with the telescope and you're a member of the club, like, it's a nice way to do it. There isn't, like, as many people around as, like, Skywatch.
Good point.
So it is a nice place to do that, like, or bring in a new eyepiece.
It's not something that I try and push membership, but it and Nightwatch are some of those members-only events that are kind of the perk for being a club member. It's a relatively dark sky, and it's members-only, so it's a good opportunity for us to do this. So if you're shy about going out there because you're not a serious astrophotographer, come out and join me, because I'm not a serious astrophotographer.
I thought it would be hard to find, but it's really easy.
Benefit Road.
I've been
yeah.
in the club since 1978, and it's the first time I went there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it is really nice.
You do need a permit for that, and it's a 2024 permit. Is that still good?
Is it?
That's what it says.
I'll fix those. All right, I'll fix that.
All right. It's still, I don't, does it have a date on it?
Yeah, there's a new one. It just.
Okay. Anyway.
We got someone that worked for the city.
Yeah.
All right. But I'm glad you're asking questions about it because we go over this stuff real fast. And if you're new and you haven't done this, any of it, you don't know what to do.
Where is that?
Where's Cornwatch?
It's like southern Chesapeake over by
Cornland Park is right next to one of the fire stations. You just pull in, it's one of Chesapeake's 80 parks, so don't just search for a park in Chesapeake. You'll have no list. But it's on Benefit Road. It's relatively dark. There's a bit of a northern loom, but not too bad. Fairly, there are some trees around, but I don't think more than, what, 10 degrees?
Anything under 30 is better than what I got now.
Sure. That's right.
I mean, it's a bit of a hike for you, but we have had some club members that are on the other side of the water.
And that's what I'm really looking for, because I'm in like Bortle 7 or 8 where I'm at.
It's shooting, like we've shot SQM readings in above 20. Not much above 20, but
good for you too, because that's right across from where you're at, right across from James Turbo. And if you get on Groups.io and you want to go to one of these events like Cornwall Park or Nightwatch, but you don't want to go by yourself. get on there and start a conversation, because that's where most of these guys are, and ask, hey, is anyone more happy today? So you know if you're going to be building one out there, which is fine, you can.
Yeah, but you have to have permit.
Yeah, well, you download the permit right off the nice site I work through.
Okay. And it's usually the correct one, I just missed this one.
Yeah.
And don't check connections, because I probably missed that one too.
Don't worry, get the permit.
Okay.
So if the right one were uploaded or attached.
It's right here, this is a link.
Yeah.
And you can download this. You know,
no, you don't need a permit.
You don't have print?
No. You just have to show it.
Well, how are you going to show it to him without printing? On your phone? Oh, okay. I didn't think of that.
It's a modern day stuff.
I mean, you can't print it.
That's how you show people your telescope.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
I'm old school. I print it out. All right.
Make sure you have your badge, too.
Yeah. You don't need no stinking badges.
Yeah, we do. I don't know that anyone's ever been questioned. The fire department certainly does not care.
Enough of me. Moving right along.
Okay.
How do I stop share?
I already stopped it for you.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Rich. All right. Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I'm going to now turn it over to our world-famous Alcor. Bruce, do you have anything for the group?
Yes. I would like to congratulate Mr. Ben Loyola for observing the, completing the asteroid observing program. Mr. Jonathan Sheets has completed the lunar observing program, which is eyes only. So you don't need a telescope for that one. Amazing. So,
three things: eyes, binoculars, and telescope. I did do the binoculars part to try, but I couldn't see that.
All right, what do you expect to make things out of me, bro? Be in here in the fall. All right, so for those of you that are not familiar with the Astronomical League, if you join the club, you get the Reflector magazine. Looks like that. The Astronomical League has about 300 clubs nationwide, and there are 23,000 members worldwide, and they have a annual convention, which just completed out at Bryce Canyon, and it was very well attended from what I saw. And there are numerous observing programs, which I won't go into here, that you can read about on the website. So these two gentlemen have completed those, and we've had several others complete them, and they're a great way for you to hone your observing skills. And that's all I have for the astronomical.
I'm going to take a page from you there. Since you were kind enough to recognize Jonathan for his lunar observing program, Jonathan's also completed another program. Jonathan, could you come join us up the front? He was kind enough to provide us the opportunity to share. Jonathan received an award, both a certificate in full color and a pin for completing the globular cluster observing program. Which is no small achievement. Great place of pride on your hand. I was looking over your letter. Do you mind if I share a few? Okay. I don't like to read things to the group, but this one's such a stellar one, pun intended. Dear Jonathan, on behalf of the Astronomical League, please accept my congratulations on successfully completing the globular cluster visual program. I'm proud to award you the certificate and pin for your achievement. Jonathan, you did an excellent job with the program. I've reviewed hundreds of blogs and find your organization, and particularly your observing notes, among the most thoughtful I've seen. I appreciate your comparison of the effects of different magnifications on the objects and for reporting how a globular cluster appeared in your eyepiece versus what you were expecting. I admire your visual observing skills. Thanks for the fine work. Good luck with all your future programs and projects, Jonathan. Sincerely, Mr. Bob Kerr, who is the program coordinator for the globular cluster observing program. I'd like another round of applause. If you haven't seen Jonathan's observing notes, they are a thing of beauty. It makes me feel like a terrible astronomer and a terrible user of human eyeballs. I can't call out the same level of detail and thoughtfulness. I've looked at things that he's shown me, and then I've looked at them. I can't see half of that, Jonathan. It's amazing. So, again, congratulations. Scholarship committee, then, do we have anything?
Nothing to report right now.
Right. Okay. East Coast Star Party Committee.
Okay. So I'm going to come up here for this one. So, so the people in TV land can hear me. All right. So does everybody have an East Coast Star Party flyer who did not get one?
I have not got one yet.
So all your questions about this biannual event are basically answered here or on the website. So in summary, basically the East Coast Star Party is next month. We already did this once in the spring. It was very successful. At Gabe's suggestion, we had a very successful Messier Marathon, actually. Unfortunately, that is not available in the fall. You'll have to come back next March. But anyway, you could start in the fall. So long story short, the event starts on the 18th of September. And you need to register. It's required by the 12th of September. So it's about a month away. It's only $60. And we need to know the count. We need to know how much food to buy and how many T-shirts to order. Okay. So send Rich Roberts out in TV land all your $60, and we can get an accurate count. On the 19th, Friday, we will have a public observing night. So if you have friends or family that only want to show up for like an hour or two, they can trek out to Chip Oaks and hang out with us. So local sunset is at 7:06 p.m. We'll have a spaghetti dinner that evening. And as always, free coffee all night long, thanks to George Reynolds' coffee tent extraordinaire. If it is cloudy, you'll have to listen to me talk about astronomy over in the visitor center. You'll need a lot of coffee for that one. I have a very deep voice, and I tend to put my audience to sleep. I'm sorry. But anyway, I actually do have a pretty new thing about astronomy. All right, and on the 20th, on Saturday, we have a cookout, and we have hamburgers, hot dogs, and we will be drawing raffle prizes at direction of my benevolent overlords. I have been instructed to only buy large, expensive prizes this time. So here's what I got. I'm just going crazy and filling up my garage. It's great fun. So Celestron power tank. I have a Orion Q 70 38 millimeter 2-inch eyepiece. I have a Orion basic telescope kit. On George Reynolds' inspiration, I found a refurbished Orion 80 millimeter refractor, short tube 80, which we will call the George Reynolds
Rabin Ghost Scope,
40 millimeters. Be like George Reynolds and come out and win this prize. And we have some Mi 20 by 80 astro binoculars and the usual selection of Bruce Powers books to augment your astronomy and astrophysics library. Stephen Hawking, great guy, you know, Carl Sagan, I got some books by them. So anyway, come on out. It's a lot of fun, and we do it twice a year. And make sure if you have non-astronomers, you know, come on out on Friday night and check us out for about an hour. And it is a rain or shine event. So as soon as you give us your $60, it's gone. We got it. So you better show up and take advantage. Okay? All right, thanks.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. I'd like to remind everyone we're supposed to be encouraging people to want to sign up, not scaring them to not wait until the last minute. All right. The only last committee I have is the nominating committee, which I have not been able to find someone to pawn off the committee chair to. So that said, I'd just like to remind folks in November, we're going to be electing the vice president and the treasurer, if anyone's interested. Please reach out. It's actually a lot of fun to be an officer for a club like this because it's just a great group to be part of and feel responsible for. It kind of encourages you to keep going. If you're unsure about what the duties are for either of those two positions, I encourage you first and foremost to reach out. I did reach out to Rich about that at Bruce's behest, and he's like, we need to find somebody. Okay, well, maybe I could be treasurer. I reached out to Rich, and he told me all about it, and lo and behold, he kept the job and I didn't try. So there we are. So if you're interested in club officership, please let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to take it to observing report. You know, you always say you never have anything. All right, for the...
Well, I should announce that we had coffee and cookies. free. Please come get some. I don't want to take anything home.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'll never forget you again.
We should start with the coffee.
That was possibly the most productive committee report yet. All right. Observing reports from the group. Dave.
Well, I'm sure at least a couple of you have mentioned this, but on the Titan Shadow Transit from this past weekend, I would like to draw some attention to that. So for those of you who don't know, like right now, Saturn is in, I think there's 3 or 4 Shadow Transits of Titan that are happening every week or so. We just have the second one, so we have to learn 2 more to see before you have to wait 14 years for the next one. Because it only happened when the rings of Saturn had John. But I dragged myself out of bed at 3 a.m. in the morning, lugged the telescope out, and just tried to catch a glimpse of the shadow, like moving across the disk of Saturn. And what they don't tell you is that even in my 10-inch dive at the highest power I could reasonably get, it's just a little like pixel on the surface. Like,
yeah.
Like you have to like, be very, you have to know exactly where to look and exactly the size. But I was able to, it was there, like a little itty bitty black dot. And as a nice bonus, it was kind of also in conjunction with Neptune that night. So I was also able to just detour. And honestly, Neptune was probably more interesting just because it was the bluest I'd ever seen it in a telescope. Like Caribbean blue, almost.
Nice.
I was out for about an hour, but like, it was a very productive hour.
I looked at it the previous month, and I think I remember thinking to myself, I'm putting an irresponsible amount of power on my 12-inch dot because I put a 4-millimeter eyepiece on. I was like, there's no way, but it
snapped. I put a 5-millimeter on mine, and that's a 10-inch.
Rich?
I went up to Highland County and had a 4.5-hour drive just to get to turn the new moon, hoping to see the Milky Way in Portal 2. Which I did, and then at 11:30 the fog. Mm-hmm. But there's a campsite over there run by a couple of hippies that retired out there. They're really sweet people. It's just their own property, and he's a carpenter and set up a clubhouse in there with 6 pump beds. And although I just used it, it was only $40 to use the pump beds. So I highly recommend it other than the fog.
I don't think anyone's ever said, man, those hippies are mean.
No, it was really great. Really, really nice people. It's right below some Amish people in next to Monterey.
Okay. What?
Jefferson National Park there.
John?
Yeah, we got at the last Cornland. Kent brought us 14 inch out, and we saw the supernova. And we also saw the Milky Way. It was a pretty good night there.
It was. Supernova was awesome to see. Yeah, how far away it is, and it actually outshone the galaxy. The only reason it did was the surface brightness was higher on that than the galaxy itself. So it was really neat to see it. I tried it at home in Virginia Beach with my 4-inch.
No way.
But we did see it. And by the way, Gabriel mentioned about the Titan shadow. You have another chance. One September, the 4th. And September the 20th. So
it's still early morning, or is it
early in the morning? Of course, it's going to be early. Saturn is rising 4 minutes earlier every day now. So it's so high in the sky now, no matter where you live, unless you've got really giant trees, you should be able to see Saturn. I'm not exactly sure of the hours at this point, but everybody's got a computer. So the 4th and the 20th.
Jeff,
we saw a bodacious amount of meteors at the meteor shower. The meteor drip, yeah. The most exciting thing, other than seeing 5 meteors, the whole night, I know 4, I think your granddaughter saw 7.
7, yeah.
But the most exciting thing was seeing the space rocket go off and take. And we could see it really, really well.
SpaceX rockets launching some star-linked satellites.
Starlink, yeah.
We
saw the separation and the rocket
it was like a huge comet with big flare, you know, with a big flare comet.
Any other observing reports?
Yeah, I just wanted to offer a suggestion if somebody ever wanted to try this out. I thought it worked well for me. I own a German equatorial now. And of all of the things you have to adjust, one of them is the cone tail. You ever heard of that? Well, that's the difference between where your telescope is pointing and where the star you're looking at really is. Everything is perfect. So I have two POS digital levels, and it was making me crazy. So I decided that I'd try to do something about it. I was killing myself trying to get consistent results, setting up a telescope. So I had a brilliant idea. I decided that I would cut a piece of wood, this part of wood. And this would be the exact declination of the weight ball. Put it on there, put a spirit level across here, crank away until it's nice and level. Ta-da, that's half the battle. And once you do that, you don't mess around with the altitude adjustment because that moves that, so it screws it up. The next thing to do is to adjust the telescope while using shim stock. And it so happens that I have to use shim stock. So I should do is find a star someplace. I prefer the south. Measure the actual coordinates. You find it in the catalog, in the astronomical catalog, or whatever you have that has it. And then you find the what that position is on your map, coordinates that you have, and you subtract the difference. And when you get the difference in the altitude from what's supposed to be, what it actually is, you subtract that, and you figure out what the angular distance is that you have to add to shift. So that's what I did one night when I was trying to find something to really look at. So I jacked up the front end of the telescope, stuck in my 14,000 shim stops on either side of the support in the thing and repeated. And I did it again just to see if I wasn't crazy. And I ended up with an error of 5 1,000ths in the shim diameter, in the shim thickness. So I said, yay. And I said, I thought I'd show you that. And if you're looking for something smaller, that's what's left over. It really looks like a track. I made this so that it would have plenty of room to put the spirit level on it. And just thought I'd share that.
Thank you. Okay. Any other observing reports? All right. We'll move on to old business. First item we're going to cover is in October, we have, and it looks like Rich has been culpin. International Observe the Moon Night is coming up in October. Justin, do you want to discuss the, because I know you were the one who brought it up originally. I mentioned it a bit in last month's meeting.
So is this October 4th? The 4th. Okay. Yeah, October 4th. What's it?
Saturday. Yeah.
This is the one that NASA puts on every year. It's a big international Observe the Moon Night. They try to gather as many people as they can across the world to look at the moon all on the same day. And so at ODU, we used to have an event yearly for this. Then the pandemic got in the way. We just kind of fell back on it and just have never really come back to doing that event. Unfortunately, we actually at ODU, we want to bring it back this year and just do something, but we have a football game on campus. And they haven't announced a time for it, so we don't even know if it's done. Afternoon game, is it evening, or what? So I figured the planetarium, we can offer some money to either help buy door prizes or moon pies or something. If you all want to throw an event, we can help support it, again, financially or something. So I want to offer that out there.
And based on the fact that you can't host it, I did reach out. I think
the Chesapeake Planetarium is willing to host.
I think we kind of have a hosting site.
One of the things that was discussed in last month's meeting was, hey, let's lock in a location. So if anyone has any other suggestions or a better location, otherwise, I think we're prepared to open up the event with two planetariums supporting. We might even get some of the other planetariums locally supporting it as well.
So on our calendar, which one should I put on our calendar?
Well, I think that's what we're about to lock in a location. Is there any?
I put it in on the calendar already as a placeholder.
Right.
But I left the location blank.
Right.
So until we get it locked in. And I also sent you a link to a NASA NSN webinar.
I was listening in on it last night live. Yeah. It was a good discussion. Is there any interest, any objection, or an alternate location proposed? I don't want to steal all the cool events. All right, great. So, okay. So we'll see that coming to, sounds like we're going to put the event on the calendar. I hope to see many people out there. I don't know whether I'll have the dome up and running, because I don't know what the state of the renovation is going to be at that stage, but we'll have something out on the lawn and maybe something inside.
Right. And a bathroom that works.
Okay. Awesome. And we'll reach out on that. Other old business, just in the interest of time, I'm going to try and breeze through some of these. There was a question that came up about reaching out to the Westneck Educators Club involvement. I know that Jeff did reach out to them, so we're trying to get that resolved. So that is in progress, and I think we'll see something popping up on the calendar once we get all that resolved through. The discussion came up last month for potential involvement with the Ronald McDonald House outreach. Have we gotten any additional updates on that? Yeah, okay, so we'll table that one for next month. George, the library telescope program, you talked about maintenance and...
Yeah, I need to go by.
Okay.
I've been really busy this month, but I'll try to catch it next week.
Okay, we'll table that one again for the following month. The holiday luncheon venue, there was some just kind of general discussion last month about it. Is there any objection to us continuing our plan to host at or to hold at Surfrider?
Surfrider.
Okay. That was where we were, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
32 plus.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Done. We won't talk about it again until we go there in months. All right, cool. All right, that is our old business.
I have one more thing listed.
What do you have?
It is for the proposed, they're full mess up about buying banners for the club.
I have that tagged under new business.
Oh, okay.
That's fair.
That's a perfect segue to
so,
new business.
Yep, great. All right, so new business. The things I have for new business are we want to make Rich spend some money, or rather we want Sean to spend some money potentially. Sean, do you have anything for the items that we were discussing?
I do. I mean, I wasn't able to upload it to the site due to lack of time, but I have a photo here if you guys want to see it. Essentially, the new solar banner thing, or banner that NASA sent out that is about this big. And we have a banner frame that is this big.
And it's also the one that we have is not like vinyl. It's
yes. And so we were discussing enlarging it because you can download the PDF and send off to a print shop. It looks like it'll be about $75 before taxes. It'll be 4 feet by 4 feet, and it'll have the club. Unlike the other banner frames that we use at these events, this one will have our name and logo on it because we're making it. And it will have our QR code on there so people can scan and go to our links and everything. And then obviously it'll have the information that NASA gave us too.
Yeah.
And I will suggest, because we're going to get to the flag thing pretty soon, the teardrop flag design, that if we want it, we should vote today because the prices are going up, what I found out.
So, Sean's proposing, so those of you who were here 2 months ago, you saw the cool new banner that we got from the Night Sky Network. Problem is as awesome it is, full color, really exciting. We use the heck out of our magnetic sun banner at every Saturday, Sunday, and some other events. Anytime we do something during the day, This one is really cool. It has a lot of different information about the different aspects of the sun. Unfortunately, it's very small, and it's not going to hold up very well. So Sean is proposing that we spend approximately $90, including shipping and any overage that's unexpected, to buy a new one that's customized to our club and will fit our needs. Any discussion? I just kind of recast your...
Yeah, you know, who's going to get the print, Damon?
This will print.
Okay. The Chesapeake City, the school city print shop, has all new equipment. They can print on anything. And then we might check with them, and they give you a break on the place.
Okay.
I'm not so open the old Burbridge High School building right there at that table. It's not pleasant.
We might ask you later for a phone number, although I have it in the office. Okay. So.
Second.
That would be, in lieu of them working out with Chesapeake, the motion would be to check with that first and then approve that.
I would offer to the group, even though I'm not sure I can offer this, we make it a conditional approval that we reach out to them. If we can get it that way at a lower cost, great. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we authorize Sean to spend up to $90 to get it if we can't get it some other way.
I so moved.
All right.
Second.
Any discussion? Any additional discussion? That was a great point, Dr. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All right. Approved. All right. Next item.
The teardrop, the flag. It's hard to see on here, but
also called feather banners.
Yeah, the feather ones. These things have doubled the price since we looked at them. This flag is now, well, the big one, $350.
Yikes.
When it's on both sides, and that's with the stand, one stand. And this is kind of put the water in it.
Yeah.
So. That's basically, I looked at two different sites right before I came here, and they've doubled. Now, I'm going to ask, Robert just suggested, maybe they can make it.
Yeah.
They probably don't make that.
And this is, the price I'm telling you is the 15-foot one. So
yeah.
The half the size might be half the cost. Okay.
Where would you use that?
You can set, I don't know if you can see what it says, but it says back there, amateur astronomers on it. It's got like, any picture you want to put in the background, and then our QR code on it, and you would use it at any event, really. Because I was going to actually modify this with a dim fairy light, red fairy light in it, so it'll glow. And if you had it on the boardwalk, and it's really tall, you'd be able to see it all the way up and down the boardwalk.
Yeah, it'd be great for like boardwalk astronomy. It's like a lot of people.
Bring your phone up.
You can use the document camera.
It's not going to be good for like Skywatch.
What kind of material is it?
Right here.
This is 3.5 ounce.
Yeah.
Put it
on the table. Put it right side.
It's not my
favorite. It's back.
It looks like a knife.
See if we can fix it so it's not back.
Exactly. It looks nice.
So it looks cool.
I think we can zoom it.
Maybe the print shop at the school might have that
material. They said 15 foot.
Yeah, this one is 15 foot. They do make like the 10 foot.
That's
so
excessive.
It'd be really cool with the boardwalk. And it's some of our bigger festivals.
That'd be like a major. We are here.
Yeah.
I mean, the smaller one is like 8 or 10 foot, so that's still pretty big. And I just didn't have time to look at every price for every one of them. There's so many different options. Vistaprint website was actually airing out on me as well.
Okay.
So I got the big one.
I feel like, well,
I can.
Why don't we start at 10 foot and see how it looks and see how it works? Spend a little less money.
How about I send the 10 foot quote to you and you can distribute out to. The Night Sky Network too with that, because it sends to all the messages. You know, if anyone's got a complaint, they can let us know.
We'll figure that out. If the prices have already gone up,
So
yeah.
You know, the price has gone up significantly since last time I looked, which was about 2 months ago.
We can figure that out. We'll send it out for discussion on the group's IO, and if people are copacetic with it, we'll do it. And if it's with the threshold that we don't have to discuss at a club meeting officially,
Sean, what's your recommendation? You recommend the 15-foot? What you've seen and heard?
Okay, and this is the other one, too, that we just voted on.
Yeah, that looks really cool. I think that's...
What's your recommendation, Sean? 15-foot? You'd like to see the 15?
I can't think of any event where it would be too big to have it at. You know, I mean, the real question to me was not how big of a flag to get. It was the device we used to hold it. Because they make one that has, like, this water tank you fill with water. And we have, on the boardwalk, that's pretty easy. There's a spigot right there. We could do it. But there's other places where you might want to stick it into the ground. And each one of these devices that you use is about $70. So
yeah, Northwest River, you know, the water's flying around there.
And they make one that hooks around your tire, though, too. So you could push it around the front tire of a vehicle, which would work great on the boardwalk, but then not at another event, maybe. So I don't want to end up buying multiple ones. It is very prominent flag, though, which would be cool at a lot of events that we do. But do we need 15-foot? No. Do we even need the flag now? Well, we've been doing it for a couple decades without it, right? But we have money.
Good way to get the view out there. I like the proposal of let's get the idea for what the 10-foot mm-hmm. flag is. I mean, if that said, my hands are tied. If someone wants to make a motion for the 15-footer or a 16-footer, then we can.
I don't think they made better than 15.
Well, not yet, but if we have.
I like to move that we make the big flag 15-foot.
Okay. A second?
And the pole.
With pole. Presumably with pole and
pole or whatever.
All right. Then moved and seconded that we get a 15-foot flag with the pole and support base for a price not to exceed 400? More?
It shouldn't be
500?
It shouldn't
probably
be
500.
More than four.
Yeah, it's going to be more than four with a couple bases.
Don't
put a limit. I'm just going to do basic.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
One for the tire, one for the water.
All right. So up to 500? Up to 4? 500? All right. All right. Any discussion? Any additional discussion? George?
Yeah. Our church has a couple of those, and poles are collapsible. They come apart, and they all fit into a bag that you can carry.
It's very portable. I mean, it's convenient. So it's more portable than some of our electric line, I guess.
Yeah, I've got a line for where to put that.
What we use to anchor them down is a four-legged stainless steel thing with a stake going up, and we put the pole goes over that. Mm-hmm. But we put a counterweight on it, sort of like a barbell, dumbbell weight.
Wait,
yeah.
Wait,
it's not dumbbells, it's a big round weight. It's about 20 pounds or something. Mm-hmm. That's pretty anchored one way.
Okay. Any additional discussion? I mean, that's certainly an option. All right. And discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Nay.
All right. We have one nay, so I think the motion carries.
How about 15?
What's that? 15, not to exceed 500. Okay, and John, did you want to talk about hot dog machine too, or have we not gotten there?
Oh, I will a hot dog machine, don't you?
Yeah.
I didn't look up the price though again.
Oh, you didn't?
You did already last time, right?
Yeah, but I don't have it on my off the top of my head. All right, we're going to table that one for now. All right, in that case, I'm going to call the end of, well, actually, what I have prepared for new business. Is there any additional new business for the club tonight? Coffee and cookies are both new and old. Well, actually, none of it's old. It's all fresh. It has to be new business. All right, in that case, I'm going to turn the floor over to Ben and probably look up a
PowerPoint machine. Is it a PowerPoint share?
That's the concern. That is a fine question.
Need some pro support here. I don't know the PowerPoint share. It's only,
we can probably share an entire screen.
All right, try that.
Share. Is that working? And go here.
Is anyone out in Zoom land confirm to us that?
Yeah, we see it.
All right. Are we ready? All right. A little background about asteroids, comets, and some of the stuff I've been doing, reporting them and how reporting. I'm going to share kind of some old ways of doing it and the latest way, which has really been a game changer in, throughout the industry of asteroid hunting. Let's see here. Here we go. First, I want to go over some of the basic names. You might have heard some of these names. Start with the nearest asteroids. They put them in groups or family groups. The Tiras, the Aten, the Apollo, the Amor. Various orbits depending on where they orbit within. Is it between Earth and the Sun, between Earth and Mars and that? Then you got Mars and Mars crossover, Mars Trojans. But the main belt, the majority of the stuff sits there out between 2 and 4 astronomical units. And as a reminder, 1 astronomical unit is the distance between the Earth and the Sun. And the majority is in the Hungarian group. But I've heard some of these names. The ones names you actually do hear quite often is the outer belt near Jupiter, the Trojans and the Greeks. And I always remember the Trojans are chasing the Greeks. And I'll show a little animation of that here in a second. The Neptunes has their own Trojans, and they're gravitational points in the orbit of these planets that attract these historical ancient rocks and pebbles and dust and all sorts of stuff. And then you got the trans-Neptunian orbits beyond Neptune, and the Kuiper belt, well beyond Neptune, and then the Oort cloud, which is basically all the stuff that makes space and interstellar space. So some of those names, you might hear them. I'm always in my logs and stuff. I try to categorize them and put them where I found them. And I'll show that to you later. This is basically, the more you learn about asteroids, the more you realize that there's just stuff everywhere, and it's all doing its stuff. You can see how they're organized and family clustered. Jupiter, going outside, the Trojans lag, and they're chasing the Greeks to the lower right-hand side. And then you have the near-Earth asteroids and the main belt, and that's the highest density right there. And, of course, outside of all this, you have that Oort cloud. This is kind of an interesting animation. It shows the laggers, the Trojans, and they're chasing the Greeks. The Greeks are running away. So that's why I remember that. Why are they there? It's just a gravitational clustering that's happened back when the planets were formed. And they just continue to linger. And it's basically the point of least energy expenditure. Nothing's being pulled or attracted, and it's there.
So Lagrange point. Yeah, it's the Earth.
Yep. Couple information on the comets and stuff. Basically, most of them in the Oort cloud and the Jupiter belt, made up of frozen glass. Basically, think of like snowballs. That's why they have these tails and emissions that as the solar wind and the heat and stuff causes that to vaporize, and the dust and the rocks that are all kind of pulled together by a very small gravitational force are eventually pulled off, and therefore the long tails are illuminated. And then when, you know, later on in life, when our planet cuts through its tail, that's where you get the meteor showers. And that's the history of it there. And then some interesting words here. So meteoroid, that's a solid object. So a meteor is a shooting star. So how you see them at night, you go to the observing things, meteor. A meteor shower, of course, is the dust from the tail of the comet. A meteor storm is a very short-lived, over 1,000 per hour. So there's a few times historically that's happened. And interestingly enough, that's visible. If you take a camera out to any of these meteor showers, you'll see a boatload of stuff. It's just because of the light pollution and your eyes don't process it. But if you can put in a long-term exposure, and even with some of the light pollution filters on there, you'll see a boatload of stuff, of meteors. And then a meteorite is finally the ones that survive our atmosphere and land. So it's meteoroid, then a meteor, and then the meteorite. So that's kind of the way that's broken down.
Why did some meteors land?
It's average. Believe me, they can be any size. You'll see that in a second. Continue on. So this is a time exposure down in Chile there. You can see, you know, that would take quite a while. If we were seeing that with our eyes, it'd be like, wow, that's just like over the top. But that's a meteor shower there with exposure. So historically, they weren't that many found of asteroids, and it was mostly because of the optics and seeing conditions and what was out there. So this was, you can see in the lower right-hand corner, it's 2002, and you can see here on this next one, you can see the clock ticking, 2001. These are the known near-Earth and asteroids, as well as the other one in the main asteroids. And as clock goes on, the density increased. And today's point is just over the clock, over the top. I mean, it's just so crowded. Stuff is always running into everything, and something's pushing, something's pulling. They're just everywhere. It's just like the video game we played as kids, the little asteroid one. It is beyond belief how much stuff. Let me see. Do I have to hit the next arrow to show this one? Don't know. You know, it has a long lead in. Let me see here. Hopefully this animation plays. It's pretty good. Nope. Move back. Come on. Let's try. There you go. Oh, this way. Okay, there you go. All right. We'll do it this way. Give it a second. And this is a little time lapse that plays. Will it play for us? No? It's not going to play. Oh, here it goes. Okay. There you go. Okay, there's a clock, 1999. And again, these are the sky surveys and amateurs contributing. These are known orbit, typically numbered asteroids. And you can see 2009, 2018. Oh, it just goes beyond this. It literally is exponential. And there you go. It is just clustered with stuff. And that's 2018.
So more are being identified?
All the time. Thousands per week. Thousands.
But
they're always there, and they're not always there. Some of them, we lose them, and they're desperate to find information about them, and I'll show you that. It's urgent. So one of the things that we're trying to do is basically get enough observation points along that elliptical orbit. And the more points we have, the more they can reverse engineer the data points, because obviously this thing goes way out, astronomical units out. So you're trying to get as many data points, observations, along that orbit so that the computers can reverse engineer and calculate that ellipse. And those are some of the terminology there. The semi-major and the eccentricity is the ratio of the width to the length of kind of a typical ellipsoid there. And then you have that is defined by the plane that the asteroid is in compared to Earth's plane, Earth's and Sun's plane, or ellipse. And then the point... First point of Aries is basically the reference point, which is the vernal equinox in March timeframe, and that's what shows a reference point. Then you figure out the angle from that. It's angle around its orbit, and then the inclination of those planes. And with all those numbers, determines its ephemeris data, and that's how you show and show the orbit. And these are a little more detail on that. So the goal is to provide enough data points so they can calculate these variables for the elliptics. So how do we do that? Here's an example of a typical asteroid, pretty much in plane with the planets. And the one on the right-hand side, you can look in the upper right-hand corner, shows the inclination there, and that's a comet. And they're all over the place, and they're going in every which direction. Most of them had... at about a 270, 250 to 290 degree angle going to the west. There's a 1981 Midas. I imaged that in the past there, and it's pretty steep. And you can see how it comes out. And if you look how close that one came to Earth and how its path crosses. So they take these orbital elements and they put them in their computers and then they project forward. You always hear about that. We're going to have a near impact here. It's going to be close by. And then they'll scream for everybody to provide data points, because you'll see, like we go around the moon, to go out with our satellites and stuff like that, or even go around Earth to go to the moon. Everything's pushing and pulling. So no matter how many data points, you always need more. And that's why it's a constant desire to get more data points. When I first started observing, I had a smaller telescope. I had a friend in South Dakota, had a Badlands observatory, pretty nice scope there. It was actually homemade, and you can see a wooden observatory there, 26-inch diameter. Donated a bunch of computers. Those are his original control room to help him out. This is kind of like his old control system and how thin fed into a typical observatory, permanent mount observatory. We have all your various feeds and your camera feeds coming into your computer and the software you use. Actually, this one was a friction drive. You had a large ring. It's basically metal on top of metal and pretty much homebrew, but it was phenomenal. They're still doing research today under science grants. On Divig, yep, on the top. Looks like Kent's Blackwell, right? Kent, yeah. All right. So where do we find these things? They're not self-illuminated. They're not an emission nebula or nothing. These are dark rocks, you know, ice clusters of dirt and dust and everything else from the origins of our universe and stuff. So you need that sun to bounce off of it and come back, because you're just looking for photons, individual photons to hit your sensor on your camera. They are so dim. Now, there's some bright ones, don't get me wrong, but the majority ones are very, very dim. So you want to be anywhere, obviously, opposite the sun and near as much to the penumbra there area, and that's the shadow. And you can see on a planetarium software, it actually shows you where the umbra and penumbra. And that's kind of like the absolute most opposite end, where the sun's over your shoulder and you're looking past the Earth out into space. So that's a good starting point. So from there, you say, okay, I'm going to start doing some a matrix view. So what that is in your planetary software, you set up like a 3x3 matrix, and you see a number between 1 to 9. And what it does is you go to frame number 1, you image for 5 minutes, then you go to number 2, you image for 5 minutes, and you just go and walk your way through to number 9. Then you start the whole process again back to number 1. And you do that about 3 minimum, or 4 times ideally. So you can see on frame 1, you will have a stack of 4 images or 3 images to work with. And then same thing for 2, 3, and that's basically getting some sky coverage. And then those 4 images get blinked, literally blinked. This is what's called mosaic, the right ascension declination and the number of sets that you want to have. And then the telescope does the moving, and this is a program that you use to basically feed that text file, basically, and it works throughout the matrix, and then you download it. Once the FIT files are called FIT files because they have data on it, right ascension, declination, all sorts of observation parameters embedded in the metadata on the file, you can use a program called Visual Pinpoint. This was old school now. It's old. And literally, it was a blinking process that uses a star catalog to place your imagery, because from your telescope, you don't get it. So you get an approximate. What it does is it uses a star catalog and perfectly affixes the centroid of that file, that image. And that's a FIT file. And that's basically you're registering the star pattern that you picked up perfectly. And it's very important because all this stuff is like arc seconds, like 0.01, 0.02 arc seconds of accuracy you need. So you really need a very good plate saw. And this was it was literally a manual process. You see in the upper left-hand corner, you click the little arrows, and that were the highlighted yellows, it would move across the sky. So you blink, 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 those 4 pictures, you know, on each of those frames. And then you move on to the next 4. And hopefully, if your telescope and the light seeing conditions were able, you could actually see something moving. And then you put your cursors on it, and then you say, okay, that's a reference point. That's a right ascension declination, because you've already registered the image. But now the software will pick up the right ascension declination at that point, and you click the next number 2 on that one, let's say number frame number 1, then you go to the second image of that, and that's about 40 minutes later, and the third image is 40 minutes later, and so that'll blink across the screen, and then you're actually reporting all 4 of those right ascension declinations, and that's the report you send to the Minor Planet Center. And I'll show you. So this is a classic old way of blinking. In this case, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 here, and the center part's missing because it didn't go back to that point in the sky. But that's what you're looking for. You're literally staring at the screen and manually clicking all those FIT files until you say, okay, I see that. And you're searching. You spent hours doing this stuff because you're zooming, you're changing you know, brightness and contrast and all that stuff. It was a very manual way of doing this to try to find something that's moving, and then you report it with your cursors, and that's what would have been reported to the Minor Planet Center. And this was an old report. Well, this was back from, where was it? 2004. There you go. One of my first reports there. And that process, the, once you put your cursors on there, it would do that. So left to right on below all the information is the temporary designation of that asteroid, of the date and decimal day, so the date, month, and decimal date. And then the right ascension, the declination, the magnitude, and then 918 is the Minor Planet Center Observatory. You cannot submit information unless your observatory has been approved by the Minor Planet Center, which is a controlled by International Astronomical Society and is also part of the Harvard and Smithsonian Education Program, and they certify your observatory. So to be able to do that, you kind of become a research grade to be able to submit. So the telescope in South Dakota already had done research. I was able to use it. I was the observer. I submitted the information because I actually targeted and told them where to go. So that was that. And that gets sent to the Minor Planet. And then they give you this thing. Here it comes back from Harvard. Says, we acknowledge your batch one sent to us, and congratulations, you have 0% junk. Hey, Ron, what happens next? He goes, you wait, you wait, you wait. So finally, weeks, months later, and this is before they got a little more automated, excuse me, they finally, you can log in to the Minor Planet Center Ephemera service. And if you look where the arrow's at, you can see 918 reported on that date. And that's the residuals for that the asteroid, which is in the upper left-hand corner, the 1998 RU62. So, and the goal is to have, you know, 1 second or below of those are called residuals between the right ascension and declination of where their orbit is and where you reported, because you're actually nudging their solution with what you're submitting. And that's in a whole string, hundreds, thousands, maybe not any, and this might be a new discovery. In this case, obviously they knew of it back in 1998, but they need more data points, because you can imagine where, how far this thing's going out in space and coming back, and they need more data points because everything's always moving. That's the biggest thing. It's incredible. And then this is called the MPC, the Minor Planet Circular. And down in the lower left-hand corner, they kind of give you credit. That's the Badlands Observatory. Ron Dybek was basically the owner of the observatory site. And then they give you credit for your submission. And then that's the end of that. So you keep doing that until at some point you can find one. And I was able to actually discover one way back when. And they allow you to name it and put a little bio about yourself. And that's kind of neat. So now fast forward to today. So today things are much more automated and much better software and much better cameras. There's a lot of astronomers, astrophotographers here. This is one, by the European Space Agency, and this is their NEO, Near Earth Object Priority List. So I look at this and I say, okay, what can I do? If you look at the, about the, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 column over, that's the magnitude. Now, 24th magnitude, 27th magnitude, all the way down. That's really beyond my C14 capability, even with what the technology I'm about to share with you in a little bit. But when I start hitting down there near the bottom, the 21.8, and that's a yes, and the PHA means potentially hazardous asteroid. It means like, not only is it near Earth, it's, and it's urgent because we want data, it's a hazardous one, and we need as many points as possible. So they're basically going out to the community saying, please give us data. We need it. And I can push the telescope just to, that's pretty much the edge of my telescope. But I'm constantly picking off the 18th magnitude, 19th, and 20th magnitudes. I'll show you that in a little bit here. And you look at the right ascension, make sure it's going to be high up in the sky. You don't want to be low because of all the light pollution and all the stuff that we have here in Hampton Roads. So it's a real pain. You're trying to, you know, fight the weather, fight how high it is up. And you spend a lot of nights up hoping to snag some of these. And then you observe them. And this is why it's so important. Check this out. This is an asteroid, and there it goes. Whoa, so much for elliptic orbit. So this is one that got slung off, and that's just the reality of it. So everything that's something will pull on something else into something. In other words, mass pulls on mass. So if it comes by a planet, or the fact even it's going by us a bunch of objects, or it's cutting through the orb cloud, or it's cutting through the asteroid main belt, it's going to move. It's going to be pushed. And then you throw the solar flare, solar wind on top of it, it's going to be pushed another direction. So everything's always moving, and we need as much data points as possible. And that's a classic, you know, that's basically how we fling satellites out to far space, and we planet hop all the way out. So here's the RRT, which we have access to up at Fan Mountain. Anybody can, any member is welcome to have free credits and use this wonderful telescope, the 23-inch Ritchie Creatine out there. And I did this, you know, limiting magnitude calculation and said, okay, you can see it, 20.65. And that's just staring. That was basically a 30-second stare. And the problem with staring is that you start building up noise, so it really hurts you long-term. That's why today's technology, we do stacking. And a lot of astrophotographers definitely understand that. And I'll explain how that works. So you can see how quickly it's like, well, even a 23-inch telescope is only get 20th magnitude. And the vast majority of all the NEOs and all the other stuff that we're worried about is 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th. You really got to work on that. So a little bit about technology and what's going on. How are you on time? Okay, we'll hurry up. So typical ZWO camera, this is the one I have, the 183. And you can see the pixels and stuff like that. But I'll bring your attention to the lower left-hand corner. That's a typical sensor, and it's embedded into a circuitry. Well, you're imaging, and mine's monochrome, but it's full-spectrum monochrome, and any heat, it will excite that because it's trying to pick up individual photons. One of the individual photons, if you look in the lower-hand corner, the photodiode converts one photon hit to one electron, and that's how it's kicking an electron off a shell and registering into a little memory, you know, storage, and then it reads that storage. So you can see that you're doing everything possible. You're tweaking your optics, your skylights and your noise pollution, everything to get extract photon that you can actually measure in your sensor. And that's the biggest thing. And you can see the second column down, the third row, full well. So each one of those memory registers in your sensor can hold 15,000 electrons, therefore 15,000 photons. So as it hits. So the problem is you got noise in there. You got the noise from the electronics. You got the noise coming from the light coming in and light pollution, all sorts of stuff. So you're fighting that, and I'll show you how we handle some of that. So this was the. So what do we do, real quick? Okay. So your light frame, which is your picture, is in the lower left hand side, and that's typically full of noise. Imagine the light goes through your telescope. You got what we call dust donuts. It's hitting a cloud. It's hitting dust, and all of a sudden you get diffraction patterns off of that. And then it's finally coming in. You got the read noise coming off the camera. You got the heat noise coming off the camera. You got the light pollution. So all that's happening. So what you do is you take a bunch of dark frames, and dark frames means you literally cover the telescope and expose the camera to the same amount of time. So now what are you picking up? You're picking up all its internal noise. And so notice the minus sign on the left lower left-hand corner. You subtract out that internal noise from the image. So now you look a little bit better. It's cleaning it up. And then the one on the right side, and don't worry about the bias, but assuming you take the flat frames literally, you can do something like a white t-shirt, or I have a photoluminescent panel, and you take a very snapshot picture. And what that does is picks up all the dust donuts and all the smudges and all the crap that's in your telescope, and it's really dirty. Because when you see that picture, it's like, wow, even though you clean it, and you do everything possible to clean it, it's still going to come out dirty unless you're in a clean room. It's literally impossible to keep your telescope clean. Because all the optics and everything comes through, but it picks that up. So the cool thing about it is you stack those and then you divide it out. And now you've taken out the noise from the darks, and then you've taken out the lights, and then now your calibrated image is looking really, really good. And folks that do that, how many folks do astrophotography? I know Eddie does, quite a few. So you know what I'm talking about here. And this is a normal process. All right, normal image plot. And so upper left-hand corner is typical, you know, fuzzy, very grainy image, and not too many stars in it. And then you start doing some calibration and some registering, and then you get the better picture. And you can see down at the bottom now that what we do now is I take 61-minute images, and now you can see not the hopping, you almost get a streamline effect. It's almost continuous. So much better process. And game changer, Tycho Tracker by Daniel. I've spoken to him many times and helped him on the tail end here, some suggestions on his software, but phenomenal. This software, you load up the 61-minute images. It automatically obviously does a calibration like any astronomical processing software, but then it brings in the known asteroids from the Minor Planet Center ephemerises and shows you where things should be and are based on real data. And this is constantly being updated. So that's fine, but how about what my observation is doing. This is what it should be. And then what it does, it takes, and I show this in optical, imagine you're all that noise and you're trying to get something that's just a little bump in a myriad of noise. That little bump, if you shift each picture, each fit file slightly over, this program uses every horsepower you have in your graphics card and runs for like a half hour, 15 minutes, and it slightly shifts every image in every angle such that it's now correlating a little bump that might be a bump amongst all the noise, but that bump repeated on image 2, 3, 4, 5. You get what I'm saying? So you have noise, but now that noise is repeating noise. Now it's not noise. Now it's an asteroid. Make sense? Probably on that. And that's what it does. It literally shifts every picture and moves them full 360 around and shifts a little bit, like one pixel, then it's 2 pixels, then it's 3 pixels. Why? Because the asteroid is moving. So you're trying to pick up something that is buried in the noise and trying to get enough signal noise ratio by stacking at various speeds. You don't know how fast it's going. It could be a slow mover. It might take days for it to move anywhere, half a pixel, or it could be screened. I've had them screened across, you know, in 60 minutes, like one corner of my sensor all the way across. So the program is just crunching your CPU and your graphics card to do that very quickly. So in any case, and so this is a raw, you can see how much noise there is. And what it's trying to do is like all of a sudden, okay, obviously the stars are easy to find, but the noise might be one little hump. And you can see it on the lower hand corner, kind of a little bump there. And so with that little bump, which might be noise, gets repeated amongst all 60 as they've been shifted. Now you know, wait a minute, it shifted so much. I know the size of the picture. I know how much I shifted it over. Now I can calculate the speed because I know what time the picture was taken. So you can see how I reverse engineer it and calculate location, speed, and all the things you need to be able to report. And so then it comes back and says, okay, this is your track. And these are high confidence level. And these are the asteroids that you picked up in that one image, which normally visually you might get lucky if you pick up one, because now look at the magnitude. Look at the fourth, fifth, 16.9, 18.2, 19.2, 26.5, 21 magnitude, all by stacking. So this has taken our amateur telescope, I have a 14-inch, but it'll take 11 or 8-inch, and just taking it to the moon in terms of the capability by stacking this stuff. And then from here, then you can report. So on that one report, bam, there was a report. When was this done? January 5th this year. So there you go. In that one frame, I was able to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 asteroids. And you can see the magnitudes there on the right-hand side, 19, 18, 20, all the way through, I think my highest one, 21.8 magnitude, which is unheard of if you're using, you know, your eyes or even the old way of doing it, because by staring at it for a long term, you're not building the signal noise. You're building on the noise as well. And that's the problem with just staring at the image. So that is a minor planet report submission. And then you can see down there that you acknowledge to email back to you, and they let you know, okay, we received it, just like you saw previously. Things haven't much changed much there. And then a few days later, if it works out, then they publish it in the Minor Planet Center with your differentials. This is my little spreadsheet. To date, I've got 104 total reports. 55 have been near-Earth objects, and 14 have been potentially hazardous asteroid reports that I've contributed. And then you get confirmation. You look on the fourth, fifth column, published Minor Planet Center circular. That's the confirmation that, one, your data is good quality, and they approved it, and now it's published in the scientific community, so everybody can, you know, improve the orbital elements so that it knows the elliptic eclipse. And this is some stats here. I mean, you can see there's just boatloads of it, 1.7 million plus. We don't even know yet. The more we look, the more we find. There's 826,000 as of, I think, last month, numbered asteroids, 37,000 near-Earth asteroids, and a short period near-Earth comets. So everything's moving, everything's pulling, and they need as much help as they can. Even with these sky surveys, they need amateurs. Like, I always thought, like, oh my God, these sky surveys are going to put us out of business in terms of we're not going to discover nothing, we're not going to be able to help anything. But everything's moving, and they need much data, because they'll go out there and image the sky, and then the weather might be bad, or they just don't. The other thing is, they don't get down to the fast movers either, because they're, you know, 2 minutes, big 24-inch out in Arizona or Chile or whatever. They're around the world. So you really can contribute from an amateur right here from Virginia Beach on a relatively modest telescope. So you say, well, what's the big deal? Well, these are the big deals. Look at the relative size of these bad boys. These are some of the four largest asteroids, numbered asteroids, that can you can see the relative aspect to them. It's pretty amazing. You can only imagine the damage. So we don't have to imagine. We'll actually check it out. So I think this will last about 5 minutes, if I can. And this will be it. You see that? It's a 5 minute. Be out of here. And that's what happens in most of them. That's what you see in the sky. You see them, you know, the meteor, and a few of them do blow up. Some make it through.
think it matters where this
series is going to be the last one.
That went off Bruce Willis right there. No.
Yeah.
Yeah,
really.
It's one way to fill in the bed. With lava.
That's how Vietnam does it.
That's a real asteroid now. That's a real asteroid. Can you guess? Thanks to these guys, Pluto got kicked out of being a planet. Damn. I like my Pluto.
I come back to the edge.
Oh, it's just a little kiss, though.
No, no kiss.
Look at the shadow.
Is that a cloud? No. Yeah, yeah. You should have seen Sharkwave this time.
That's going to
be hard. I'll pop out. Come on, man. I said just a little off the top.
Well done. All right. Well, so as astronomers, we know too much now, right? We just know too much. Like being a nuclear engineer, I guess.
Just a flesh wound.
I'm getting out of here, but any questions or not? Because that's why I'm so passionate about this stuff. Me and my girls, you know, we pray every night. It's like, you know, protect our home, our neighborhood, our country, our planet, especially from asteroids and solar flares. Every night. So, two things. Quentin and I wouldn't even know what happened.
I think you got a question from the audience.
And we're running a little behind, but go ahead.
Yeah, real quick. I was curious because I saw on a lot of your reports that you're reporting magnitudes in R-band. Are you actually shooting, or is you doing unfiltered is what I imagine you're doing?
Unfiltered.
Yeah, and then you just had to pick one. I do know people who do multiple bands of the same asteroids, and from that they can get rotation and things like that.
Yeah. Interesting enough, I mean, you can get rotation just because of the shift in magnitude, you know, get light curves and stuff as well. It's pretty amazing.
The
software is so precise and so accurate. It's precise. I'm blown away that, you know, with something inexpensive, $50 on software. And he's a scientist. He works for the FAA and just wrote this. And it's a phenomenal technology. It's pulled together that any amateur telescope can just pull this, extract the data that you're capturing with one camera. It costs $300, $400.
Can you get the size of the asteroid? Get the rotation, get the
I've never done the rotation. The software supports that. I've never done any of the light curves or any of the rotation. Those were different modules in the software. I haven't got any sizes on that now. Now, on the known asteroid, they know them quite well. But
yeah, so when they're doing the rotation, they're actually looking too for not just like size, but kind of like the shape. And I can't tell you enough about how they actually do it, but I know the guys do that with. Yeah. Usually by shooting with different filters, measuring the different magnitudes, they can work out the because these things are not spheres. They're all irregularly shaped.
Yeah,
and so they can figure that out, and there's different stuff they can figure out.
So like this Mars moon. Yeah.
Anything else? If not? Thank you.
We're glad that you're out there protecting us every
day. Fine, done our part. They're out there. Stand by.
So, as Ben did point out, we are a little over time, but I hope everyone found that
time with all their eyes certainly did.
Torbrise?
That was where I'm at. Can't really have any to
believe. All right. Then is our presenter to who? I'm sorry. Does anyone not have a Torbrise ticket? All right. The number is? Last two digits are 65. 65, everyone.
Oh,
although, then we need to be like serious or something.
I'll be serious.
All right. Does anyone have anything else for us tonight?
Hey, let's see what
I want to take the motion to adjourn and thank you all for your time.
What did you get?
I got a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right. Any all in favor?